Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 22nd, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues and remote aunts with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. I am Becky Worley.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
And behind the boards is our radical producer.
Awesome.
Eric Lennigan.
Gnarly.
This is the show where we attempt to make sense of the daily tech headlines and news. And joining us is Christopher Null. He is a computer guy whose name is Null. I mean, does he need any other explanation? Okay, he's also a very prolific tech blogger for the Yahoo News. Chris, welcome.
Howdy.
We are starting today's show with a story that's breaking now. Business Insider is reporting that Dell and the SEC have reached a settlement in their ongoing fraud case. Dell will pay $100 million in fines. Michael Dell will personally pay $4 million. And this is concerning fraud allegations around Dell's failure to disclose its relationship with Intel. Now, Chris, it's been a rough couple weeks for Dell. They had leaky capacitors. They had servers shipped with malware. Is this good news or bad news for Dell?
Right now, it looks like it's kind of average news. It's probably good that this episode is getting put behind Dell. However, Dell has been kind of hinting that this was coming for about the last month. And if you look at the stock today, it's pretty much flat. Really, I think it's more of an embarrassment personally to Michael Dell. He's got to pay out $4 million because he didn't treat his relationship with Intel properly, and it's a little bit silly for him.
That's a drop in the bucket for this guy, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the stock's way, way down, but he's still loaded.
Yeah. I think that this does fundamentally feel like a financial story that's been settled in the past and, you know, one that they can at least put to bed. So we will do the same and move on to a little bit more juicy story, if you will. Mark Zuckerberg sat down yesterday with Diane Sawyer from ABC News. And the interview, you know, we talked about it a lot on the show. We're really wondering, is Diane Sawyer, the woman who grilled Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, going to do the same thing to Mark Zuckerberg? And
no, not really.
No. I mean, nothing major came out of the interview. I think this guy has an innate ability to talk and talk and talk and say absolutely nothing.
Yep.
So, I watched the online clips because they were a lot longer format. And Diane pressed him for a long time about this privacy issue. And you know what? We got pretty much nothing, the big donut. What we did know, there's a dislike button that's in the works.
Right.
Maybe. And the question of whether he signed a contract giving majority ownership of Facebook to a wood fuel salesman in New York in 2003, well, I'll let him speak for himself.
If we said that we were unsure, I think that was likely taken out of context, because I think we are quite sure that we did not sign a contract that says that they have any right to ownership over Facebook.
Chris, did you think this was the most salient thing to come out of the interviews?
Yes, and his playful banter with his interviewer, it was really quite not enlightening at all. Actually, I've never seen an interview with Mark Zuckerberg where he said anything of substance. And that, as you said, the guy has an ability to just talk and talk, and nothing ever comes out. I don't know how he ever got funding for his company. Maybe they just got tired of him being in the office. They just brought him a check. Get out.
Take the money. Run.
Get out. You're so boring. You're talking and talking and talking. And actually, I think Diane Sawyer, she did ask him directly about whether interviews are tough for him. She referenced the D8 conference. But the question, this was probably the most insightful thing that came out of the whole interview. Don't you think, Eric? Go ahead and play it.
So do you hate interviews?
Yeah. I like how you just said that with a completely straight face.
Yep.
Do I feel like I hate interviews?
I'm just asking. No. I'm looking for transparency.
No, I mean, honestly, the thing that I love is building things. So I'm probably not... I'm probably not as used to doing TV and all the public stuff as a lot of CEOs at similar companies would be.
You know,
I can't help but laughing at, I'm just looking for some transparency here, you know?
Throw
I mean,
me
is that
bone,
is that telling?
Kid.
I mean, just come on.
I know, and if you weren't watching, he looked off camera to obviously his handler to try and get some sense of what to do. And all I can say is media coaching, because the first thing he did is he turned it around.
Asked her a question.
And asked her
do
a
I
question.
Do I feel like... Does it feel like I'm not enjoying this?
I can't wait to hear the inside story from the producers. It's definitely something. But apparently, he does not hate all media, because there is a story that Mark Zuckerberg, it's a rumor in the New York Magazine's Vulture blog, saying he's done a voice session for The Simpsons, and he's set to play himself in an episode dubbed Lona Lisa, where Lisa starts a company and she goes to an entrepreneur conference and learns that pretty much all the rich guys dropped out of school early.
Nice.
Inspirational, no?
Very inspirational. Yeah. But
seriously,
this is different media. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say this is different than an interview. This is a voiceover. This is just a few lines of script. This is not being grilled to find out, you know, about contracts being signed, et cetera. So, sorry, Chris, go ahead.
I was just going to say, once you're on Facebook, I mean, once you're on The Simpsons, is there really anything else left in life to achieve? I mean, he can hang it up right now. I mean, he's done.
He's moving to Tahiti, I'm pretty sure. And Steve Ballmer may also be moving to Tahiti. There's yesterday at Microsoft, they did an investor event where they had a 30 years of Ballmer tribute. But today, rumors are circulating that it may have been a farewell tribute. Silicon Insider says dissent in Redmond growing and that the stock malaise, I love that word, is attributable to the Ballmer discount. Chris, you think Ballmer is a liability here? And if he goes, the stock goes up?
Well, first of all, I mean, is there anything that sounds more horrifying than 30 years of Ballmer? Jesus. I don't know. I mean, Ballmer is now, I mean, Bill Gates had a very long run at Microsoft, and he was beloved the entire time. And then Ballmer came in, and now all of a sudden the stock has just been pummeled. This company is doing okay financially, but it's like a lot of reporters and pundits say, there's just no street cred for Microsoft. You know, they're irrelevant in the valley.
I've heard go ahead. I was just going to say, I've heard another perspective on that, which is that Microsoft is just kind of a staple now, that it's like a blue chip, that we shouldn't expect it to perform really, really well in the stock market, that it's going to, you know, go up and down, but within a very limited range, and it's probably not going to go anywhere anytime soon, and regardless of a new CEO or not.
We'll get to their stock a little bit later. I know this is really financially heavy today, but it is earnings miss, as Tom would call it. But we'll get to their stock a little later. Want to hit some Windows 7 phone news. Microsoft has confirmed that Dell and HTC will be making hardware for Windows 7 phones. In addition, Asus, LG, and Samsung already confirmed. And if you're a Microsoft employee, this is really good news because they got a perk announcement yesterday, an internal memo sent out that says, from VP Andy Lees, I'm thrilled to announce that Windows 7 phone will be made available to every Microsoft employee. So the question, Chris, is this really a perk? Is this internal testing? Or is this just a way to bump the numbers out straight out of the gates?
I was going to say, there's no better way to get market share than to give your own employees your own product. They get a free copy of Microsoft Bob, too, it turns out.
Nice.
Or
but yeah, I mean, you'd think they have to. I mean, I've heard many stories of Microsoft employees that have iPhones that have to keep them in their desk and out of sight because they're strictly banned on campus. And hopefully this will convince them that they don't need those iPhones anymore. They can go with the Windows 7 phone. It'll be even better.
And even cheaper if you're a Microsoft employee. Now, talking about the old budget and saving, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor. This episode brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If your job is tech support, this is an easy way for you to save time and money. GoToAssist Express, brought to you by our buds at Citrix. It's easy, it's secure, it enables you to see a problem on the remote machine without having to be there. Specifically, it's designed for small businesses and professionals. And here's the deal. You don't have to pre-install any software on the customer machine. So if they have a problem, you can start supporting them online instantly. If you want to try this, go to Assist Express. It's a free 30-day trial. And the URL, let me give you this clean. GoToAssist.com/TNT. And I'm going to try this out purely to be able to help my family members who call me all the time.
Becky, help me.
My aunt just moved back to Hawaii, and I used to do like a monthly pilgrimage to try and fix her computer, so I'm on it. Twitter, performance update. On the Twitter engineering blog today, Jean-Paul Cozzati posted an update about capacity issues, failures that hit them yesterday, and sort of long-term problems. I'll summarize the technicalities. They're a little boring, but Monday they're basically saying was a technical whoops. The database that they had for identities created this query loop that was ongoing and ongoing. But the long-term capacity issues are just a byproduct of what Cozzati says is riding a rocket ship of growth. They're just too popular.
They're too popular, and they didn't plan for it. They're just going to keep saying that over and over again.
I think that they've realized they got to do something big. So they say they've made 50 improvements since the World Cup when they got absolutely slammed. They've added 19 million users since April. And what they're going to do is double capacity of the internal network, double throughput speeds, and they're opening their own server facility in Salt Lake and posting in Salt Lake City and posting 20 engineering jobs. Is this enough to quench our Twitter needs?
I think it's the beginning. I mean, having their own server farm, getting more engineers on the job. I mean, it's going to be the big first step in really being able to solve a lot of these problems.
Chris, 19 million new users since April. Is that really saying something about Twitter, or is this just kind of keeping along with their growth?
Well, that's a lot of new users. I, for one, am personally 100% sure that these solutions that they're implementing now are going to solve every problem that Twitter has ever had. I have no question. It's never going down again.
Ever. You know ever. No more fail whale ever again.
Chris Null said it here first. He is solidly certain that Twitter issues are over. I'd like everyone to put it on the record.
I like it.
An update on the Google Wi-Fi slurp story. We've had a lot of discussion, I like the sound effect, about the collection of personal data from Google Street View cars. But Wednesday, Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal said he's leading a 37-state investigation into the breach. And in a letter to Google, Blumenthal asked a series of pretty obvious questions like, did Google test the software for data collection in advance? That's a pretty straightforward question, but this is a zinger. He wanted the name of the programmer responsible for putting in the code that collected the header and the payload data from personal networks. So is the coder's identity really relevant to Google's culpability?
Right. Well, that comes down to whether or not it's Google who was responsible for what they were doing, what they were snooping on while they were out there. Was Google really just trying to find out where Wi-Fi was as they were taking pictures? Or was Google actually looking for something more that they didn't tell anybody about? Or was this a lone programmer who acted on his own? And in which case, maybe Google does have a responsibility to kind of, you know, put that programmer out there.
And Google says it was a lone programmer sort of working off the reservation. But where's the culpability issue? And Chris, I spoke with the folks at Google and they said this guy's still working there. So,
still snooping.
You know, he's still there. So, you know, why do they want to know the guy?
Well, he's probably on double secret probation. But it sounds like that old fashioned throw the guy under the bus.
Yeah.
If something comes down and, you know, 37 states suing Google or investigating Google, that's not good. If you can get rid of one guy and say, oh, it's his fault. Hey, I can imagine that is not plan B. That's plan A.
Yeah. And given your penchant for prognostication here, Chris Null, here's what I'd like to see if you can confirm. So this one engineer at Google and Gray Powell from Apple will be having a startup company in about 5 years that changes the world. Yes or no?
100% certain.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. What was that guy on The Tonight Show? The great Swami?
Man.
That'll be Chris Null. That's good. Our prognosticator. Mm. Speaking of Apple, they have displaced Oracle as the company.
The great Carnac.
Nice. Apple has displaced Oracle, speaking of Oracles, as the company with the most security vulnerabilities in its software. This is sort of Apple fanboy bait, but basically, if you dig a little deeper, it says Secunia Software is saying that so far in 2010, Apple has had more reported flaws than any other vendor. So Apple, then Oracle, then Microsoft in the third place spot. The important thing here is this is quantitative, not qualitative. It's not saying Apple software is the least secure. It's saying they've had the most vulnerabilities disclosed. And the trend here, Chris, that Ars Technica is pointing to is that it's not just operating system flaws. This is really about third-party software that's running on these systems, no?
Right. So when you get Microsoft, yeah, you are reporting any application that runs on Windows. But with Apple, they write so much of their own software that the users use. A lot of these programs are being, the vulnerabilities are in their own programs.
Right.
So,
Safari, QuickTime, iTunes, those are some of the biggest culprits.
Yes. But the one key point about this study that you alluded to is that it doesn't take into account the severity of the problems. So some of them may be extremely trivial, whereas in another application or another vendor's software, it could be very serious. So it's an interesting study, and I've done a lot of reporting this year so far on Apple vulnerabilities and that company's refusal to really acknowledge them and just stick by that we don't get viruses. The words that they just always have adhered to. And, I don't know. I think it's time for a change.
Do you have any, I know that for the longest time, the reason they don't get viruses because they haven't had the market share. They haven't been of interest. But what is the market share now of these Apple products versus others?
If you're talking about Mac computers, they're still only at about 6%.
Right.
But really the attractive platform for viruses is now iPhone.
Yeah.
And iPad. I mean, this is where all the computing is going to be done, and this is where all the exploits are going to take place.
But in the same vein, the threat of mobile viruses has been so big for so long, and we've never seen anything that quite hit the spectrum of all the oldies but goodies, the Code Reds and the I Love Yous, that we saw in early 2000s, late 99. So, I mean, I'm waiting for that sort of where were you virus for mobile or for Apple? And I mean, the last significant, like, big Apple virus was like mac.simpsons.doe. I mean, I remember the file name. This was a million years ago. But I mean, I just had, there's no collective consciousness on something that's been hugely right. exploitive for the bell curve of humanity.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that won't happen, right? Hopefully the industry will get its act together and start building security into these products before we have those epidemics. I mean, I remember reporting about I Love You and all of those nasty, nasty viruses that cost billions of dollars in damages. And, you know, I certainly don't want that to happen again.
Chris Null says Apple never to have viruses again.
And we hope that Becky Worley just hasn't called out the hackers.
An agency for authors putting older books and older titles directly into the Kindle bookstore, bypassing publishers. So the Wiley agency represents Norman Mailer, Saul Bellow, Ellison, Updike, Rushdie. They're putting 20 book titles in the Kindle store that don't have digital rights stipulation in their contracts already. So the deal, the authors or their estates get better margins on the sales, and the agency, you'd think, makes a bigger cut here.
Yep.
And they say they'll gladly put any other work that's unsigned and doesn't have digital rights up on the Kindle site. So is this, Chris, a salvo over the bow, that sort of the death knell of the publishing houses, or is it too early to claim publishing is dead?
It's probably a little too early to claim it's dead, but it is a salvo, I think. You've got an industry that wants to have its cake and eat it too. You know, they want to keep these high margins. They want to keep book prices very high and take an enormous amount of the profit. And really, in the ebook world, there's no reason for a writer to deal with that middleman. I mean, if you're somebody on the caliber with Norman Mailer, and they're not, you know, these old guys are not the only ones who have done this. Stephen King has done this. A number of other writers have done it, and just as an experiment, see if you can really bypass the traditional industry and keep more of the profit for yourself. I think it makes great sense for the writers. And, you know, it's interesting to see hundreds of year over 100-year-old industry have to go through some change like this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, but it's only writers who are already dominant in the market, who've already gotten somewhere, who can really do this. It's like musicians in the music marketplace. The publishing houses are where they're kind of gatekeepers for quality content, you hope. You can look at certain publishing houses and go, I like the books that this publishing house publishes, what comes out of them. And so as a reader, as a consumer of books, you have a certain quality control that comes out of publishing houses. So yeah, not the death knell yet for publishing houses, but at the same time, if agencies do want to put these older books that don't have digital rights signed into the contracts with publishers, this is great. Get them out there and be able to make more money off of them.
But they're also, this agency is still charging $9.99 for the books.
Right.
And they've cut the middleman. So shouldn't they be bringing the consumer in on some of the discount here and maybe offering the books for $4.99 instead of trying to just reap monster profits?
You would think. You would think that would make sense. But I thought that when music went digital, they would make the prices of tracks cheaper because you're not having to print it on anything. You're just making it available for somebody to copy off the internet, but it didn't happen in music either. If you download an album, you're still looking at $15, $16 to $20 for an album worth of music.
But I think the discount you get is that you only have to pay for the tracks you want, and the filler you don't. So basically, when it comes to pop music, which is really in my vapid mind the only music I can listen to. Really, these days, trust me, I just use music to run to. It's such a sad admission. God. But I mean, so really, I'm paying 99 cents for some crap here and 99 cents for some crap there, as opposed to $15 for one song.
I'd rather spend 10 cents, 15 cents for some crap, and then maybe spend a little bit more on something that I like a lot more and want to support. But yeah, I think you're right with these older books. When we're looking at books, I mean, these books have been out for a really long time. And something that the article says is that the cover artwork isn't even updated. It's old artwork from old books. And you can just go download or buy a used copy for $5 somewhere.
So Dr. Kiki prognosticates that music will be discounted based on its low level of stars or crap factor.
That's right, crap factor.
You heard it here first. That seems to be a recurring theme here. Let's hit the lightning round here. It is earnings seasons, and I know we've been financially heavy, but this is actually important here because, number one, Nokia reported earnings and says profits are down 40% from the same quarter of last year. This is a good, a point that they need a new CEO. They're on that search. We talked about that yesterday. Amazon narrowly missed revenue expectations. They reported $6.57 billion. Expected was $6.58 billion. But they say a bright spot is sales via mobile devices. Jeff Bezos explains that customers around the world have ordered more than $1 billion worth of products using a mobile device, and they see that as really the future of their business. And finally, save the good news for last, depending on how you see it. Microsoft blew away revenue estimates. $16.04 billion is what they reported, $15.3 billion expected. And a big question that we had yesterday was Apple, who was, I think, 15.6 in their revenue. Were they going to beat Microsoft on total revenue for the quarter? And they did not. So even though they've usurped the market capitalization, Apple's still a step behind Microsoft on revenue. Is that about what you expected, Chris?
There you go. That's all Ballmer. Ballmer did it.
30 years of Ballmer did it.
Took it 30 years.
You're so pro-Ballmer. I admitted yesterday that I have a little mini crush, a secret crush on Steve Ballmer. So maybe now we know. Maybe you have a man crush on Steve Ballmer.
That explains so much about
everything.
You, Becky. Now I know.
Now you know. From Comic-Con, some big news. Stan Lee announcing three new comic book characters. Who are they and what are their superpowers?
The characters are Soldier Zero. It's by writer Paul Cornell, who's also written Doctor Who with DC Comics. And the art is by Javier Pena. And the expected launch date is October. Soldier Zero is a wheelchair-bound teacher who becomes Soldier Zero, and Cornell says he is a chap who is in a wheelchair who gets the chance bonded with this alien soldier to be out of the chair doing extraordinary superheroic stuff.
Soldier Zero.
Soldier Zero. There's also The Traveler. This is written by Wade with art by amazing Spider-Man artist Chad Harden. And The Traveler is a, the character is a time traveler or a time jumper, but he's a little bit different. He doesn't play by the rules. He doesn't care if he changes history or not.
Ooh.
So if he saves somebody's life who was supposed to die,
So be it.
There, and the consequences will change the universe. And so you get to read about all the changes that would take place after that. Seems like it would be a really interesting comic book universe to get into. The final comic is Starborn, written by the iZombie writer Chris Roberson. And the art is by Kerry Randolph. It's going to be out in December. Turns out Starborn is somebody who was born on Earth, and he discovers that he is the heir to an extraterrestrial empire. However, he finds out that his dad was the bad guy, and so he now, his empire is fighting the freedom fighters, and you know, Starborn really just wants to free people.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Complicated.
There's lots of stuff to be delved into there, and we should note that Tom Merritt is en route to Comic-Con right now. And he will be reporting from there tomorrow with much more detailed information about all things nerd, geek, and does that count as dork? No.
Maybe.
Just nerd, geek, and sci-fi.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a little dorky, too.
Could someone please cue the Dragnet music and the film noir video effect? Listen up, crime fighters. This next story will make your vigilante heart alight. A woman in San Francisco carrying an iPhone. A guy rides up to her on a bike, snatches it out of her hands. But wait! This is no ordinary phone. Oh, no. It was a demo phone for a company that makes mobile tracking software. And they were showing a client how cell phone tracking works. It took about 10 minutes for the police to track down the thief about a half mile away. The company's demo guy says, hey, what are the chances of that happening during a demo? And he said he was going to use some of the program's other features, like turning on a microphone to hear him and snapping a picture. Conspiracy theory, was this all a PR stunt, or did this really happen on the streets of San Francisco?
I think it was a brilliant PR stunt. What are the chances?
Chris Null, you live in San Francisco. No. Was it you?
No.
No.
Really? Your next computer
could be
what?
Made of poplar trees.
Random.
Totally random. This story was running in a popular science magazine. Some researchers at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem have made nano poplar silicon chips. So they've published in Nature Nanotechnology that they've figured out a way to miniaturize the memory elements, so silicon chips for your hard drive, your computer, and increasing their memory capacity. And they genetically engineered poplar proteins to hybridize with the silica nanoparticles. And the nanoparticles attach to the inner pore of the protein, and the poplar pores are arranged in an array of molecular memory elements.
Your chips grown from nature.
From nature.
It's predicted here first.
I like it. In
our calendar today, we have one exciting piece of news. Windows 7 Service Pack 1 coming early 2011. All the updates you missed and exciting feature enhancements coming in early 2011. Hold on. I know it's exciting. That's it. The calendar's kind of lean. Sorry about that, guys.
What about it? 31 years of Balmer.
Oh! Next year.
Oh.
That's what you're predicting?
It is.
Another prognostication.
That's right. Service Pack 1 coming in 2011 and another year of Balmer also coming in 2011. Got some email here for you. Greetings and salutations. I thought this might pique the interest of Dr. Sanford, a.k.a. Dr. KK.
That's me.
It's a story of how a condominium community must submit their dogs for DNA testing. That way, if a dog owner is lax in his or her doggy duty, they can be fined. Considering the cost involved to get each dog DNA tested and then DNA testing each doggy do, I wonder if the ends will justify the means. This is from Chris in Portland, Oregon. And he says, I hope you will enjoy the article. He sent this story. And as always, he says, I have a prodigious penchant for this particular proprietary podcast.
Nice alliteration.
Chris. So what do you think? Doggy poop DNA?
They can do it. It's kind of a... they could do it, but I mean, forensics labs are behind in all sorts of testing of actual crimes that actually matter to our society. It is expensive, but if you're paying for it, maybe it's part of your monthly condominium dues.
Chris, do you have a lawn?
I don't know.
I do not have a lawn. That's the beauty of living in San Francisco.
I have a lawn.
But I still have the dog poop problem on the sidewalk.
Oh, on the sidewalk. Oh, yeah. That's really not pleasant.
Yeah, sometimes dog poop is a crime.
Don't
play that down. That's a crime.
No, and as a homeowner, I can tell you that I scoop 4 to 5 a day off the front lawn from my... I'm ready.
Your own dog.
No.
No.
No, random dogs. Random. I have a Logitech wireless, sort of hooks into your Wi-Fi network camera.
Oh my gosh.
I am going to put it on the roof of my garage and point it down there and do the record software. And I am going to start delivering the poop back to the neighbors.
That's great.
I think you can either go DNA or you could do poop vigilante.
I think you could. I think cameras would be cheaper.
Maybe, but then you have to hire someone to watch or go through the footage.
For
a one time only.
That's what kids are for.
Yeah, my kids are maybe a little too young for
Detective
that.
Detective children.
All right. We have another email. And to read you in, Chris, as you're not quite familiar with the show yet, we have decided that we are outsourcing all our rants because generally we are too friendly. It's great that we have you here today because you're sort of a curmudgeon. So this is actually a good addition, Chris Nall. But we have
my yard.
I
don't even have a yard.
I like it. So we've outsourced our rants, and this one comes from Peter. He says, why have we reached the nexus of all things 4? 4G, 4Square, iOS 4, ID Tech 4, Mozilla Firefox 4, Silverlight 4, NVIDIA GeForce 400, Bluetooth 4, Super Street Fighter 4, Sonic the Hedgehog 4, Quad-Core Computing, and Modern Warfare 4, just to name a few. Too much of this, and we're going to start becoming tetraphobic. Tetraphobia exists. Look it up. The Chinese must think we are harboring the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And that is Peter's rant. People, can we get behind this?
I can get behind this. I can. I mean, the Chinese, they are tetraphobic. The number 4 instead of the number 13, bad luck. Mm. So, you know, maybe technology providers want to move on. Get past number 4 as quickly as possible.
The iPhone 4 has been sort of unlucky for Apple. So do you think the iPhone 5, Chris, is going to change everything for Jobs & Co?
Yeah, they probably just need some of that Balmer power, though. That's what I would do.
It's not Windows 7. We're going to regress to Windows 5.
Absolutely. Get rid of the 4s.
I think the 4 is not with us. I would like to thank all of you who endured this episode of TNT without Tom Merritt, Ace Detect. Thank you very much to Chris Null. Yahoo News is where you can find him. He is their tech blogger extraordinaire, and he actually knows what he's talking about. Dr. Kike will be here doing your show right after this, and that will also be available for download. And Eric, thank you so much for enduring me. Yeah. Thanks to all of you who watch TNT. We will see you again next time. Null is a fracking hit.